Welcome to the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast with your hosts, Matty Wood,
Matthew Davis,
and the Roto Gut, Vlad Sedler.
Hello and welcome to the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast. I'm your host, Paul Spohr, joined, not as always, but by sometimes, my co-host, Matty Davis. Matthew, how's it going?
It's going good, and I'm excited to have you back on the podcast. So Vlad and I both thank you for filling in for him as he is somewhat pivoting. Not that he's going to be shifting focus, but kind of gravitating a little bit of more focus towards the fantasy football season. He's doing an NFFC Beat Vlad Sedler online championship tonight. And so we were happy to have you. When I told him that you were coming on, he was ecstatic for that. And I think it was perfect timing too, because you were the host slash my co-host and guest right before opening day. So we had pleasure of hanging out in Las Vegas. And then you came on the pod right before opening day and we gave some predictions. Some not that great. Some were pretty good. I went back and kind of looked at the outline to see what we were saying. You know, the Anaheim Angels takes were not the best.
Yeah. I took them to win the World Series. So, and I think you had them in the World Series.
So
that was rough. We did rough.
Yeah, that one didn't go as well. But I think the timing's right because now we're kind of kicking into the second half, so to speak, even though we are over a little bit over 50% of the season.
Wait. Can I have a rant about that?
Yeah.
Is there
what do we call it?
Halves don't have to be equal.
Okay.
Halves don't have to be equal. Right?
I agree. Yeah,
it's the halfway definition right now. One or two equal or approximately equal parts. Okay, so they're approximately equal. Like it's okay. It's okay that it's not a direct half. I think it's fine if we just accept that, hey, it's, you know, it's half and half. Again, they're unequal halves, but they're not so disproportionately unequal. Like nobody has 100 games yet, right? So it's okay. It's okay. I'm not roasting you. Everyone does it. I do it. We all do it. We all focus in on the fact that it's not the actual half. Tell you what, Maddie, who gives a shit moving forward?
I love that you mentioned that, though, because the reason why I kind of give that bumper is because when I say the halfway point each year at this time of year, my wife goes, how are we doing? The All-Star break, blah, blah, blah. And I go, yeah. And she goes, so halfway, we have half, you know, another half to go. Like it's more.
And
so when she asks that, I kind of go, well, there's X amount of percentage left.
That's fair because people that, you know, aren't as in tune with it, you want them on the right page there. So you want to let her know, hey, there's not exactly 81 games left. In the Dodgers case, there's 72 left. They've got exactly 90. So, you know, it's 56%. So it's fine. I think for our purposes in the fantasy world, it's fine to call it halves without any sort of qualifiers. I understand why you would qualify it for the misses, just to let her know, hey, not quite as many games and maybe a little bit of urgency, right? You know, don't think that you have all 81 games to catch back up. You only have maybe 72 to 75 type of games, but I'm okay with it being a half. It's never really close to 81 as far as I know. I think the All-Star game would have to be in, I guess, at the very beginning of the month, I guess. They could do it, but who cares? I don't know why they don't do it exactly at the half, but I'm okay with where it is.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's a good breaking point, so to speak. What do you do? Do you besides sleep and eat and use the restroom, it's like, it sounds like we don't have any lives whatsoever, you know, outside.
I mean, I do make baseball my life. You know, I really do. I obsess over it. You know, I stream on Twitch where I play video games and I play winter games and fall games during the winter. I'll play 2K, the basketball game, Madden, college football. But man, the second that like pitchers and catchers report, I turn on the baseball hat and it's over. Like I drop Madden cold. I was playing the NCAA game. I dropped it cold when baseball started coming. And it's not hard for me at all to drop everything not baseball related. So I overdrive there and I usually have a couple downshifts every year. There's usually one in like mid to late May, just where I need a couple nights where I don't watch a West Coast game. I maybe keep an eye on the Tigers game. Then I jump off into something that's not baseball related, some TV, a movie, something. And then I do it again at the break, but not for every day. I mean, I watch the Home Run Derby, which I love the new format. The timed format is way better. We need some tweaks though. You know, the Schwarber stuff, where he might have had an extra homer. If people are putting money on it, DraftKings is promoting all this stuff with the betting, then you have to be precise. It is an exhibition. It's fun. But if you're going to allow people to put money on it, you have to be precise with the scoring. So I will say that to the people who say the format needs to change. I don't think it needs to change. I think it just needs to be scored properly and like meticulously, because again, you're putting money out there. But then on Tuesday night, I will watch the game, which I think is the best All-Star game by far. Of course, they're not clearing a huge bar there. All the other All-Star games suck. So all you had to do was just not be awful. And the only reason that baseball is good is because you don't have to play half speed. Because they don't mind going out there and throwing like a hard bullpen. They would be doing it in the bullpen anyway. Like, you don't think anybody ever unloads for 100 in the bullpen? You're crazy. Like, they will throw hard in the bullpen. So they can do that in the game. That's okay. But in football, you don't want to be crushing people. That's stupid. We're in Hawaii. Why do I want to rip my ACL? So I understand why they have to downshift. Same with hockey and basketball, both sports that have a lot more contact than maybe people realize. Hockey, I think people understand because of the fights, but basketball is a very difficult sport on your body. And I don't think people quite give it the attention it deserves. But anyway, baseball, you can downshift easily. They can just play a game where you're not really half playing it. That's why the All-Star game is the best. But then yesterday, Wednesday night, is the night where I'm like, okay, there is no baseball on the schedule. I will fully disconnect. We went to trivia last night. Definitely nice. Do that. You know, I like to do that every Wednesday anyway, but that's nice to just turn off. And then when I got home, didn't have to check box scores, didn't do anything, just hung out for a little bit. And then we went to bed. So I really get only one full day unplugged, but I'm okay with that. I'm already eager to get back into it. The fact that the Tigers had two games today and that we ended up getting a decent little slate, because usually it's only like two or three games on the way back, but there were two doubleheaders. So we got extra games today. So I'm ready to kick it into high gear. I don't take much time off. What about you, Maddie? Do you downshift completely, or how do you approach the break?
No, not necessarily. I was kind of actually scratching at Fab a little bit to see if there was any advantages there, which teams were going to be looking to be sellers. If they were selling, who were they going to sell? And if they sold, where can you take an advantage of that?
Maddie, I did a whole chart of like every contender and every flop team, of like who the flop teams are going to sell and what can the contending teams realistically use, just to start getting the lay of the land on the trade deadline. I totally agree with you on that.
I love it. Yeah, and I started to look into the overall standings for the main event and categories, and to see where some ground can be made and trying to find weaknesses and where I could, you know, fix those weaknesses. Other than that, though, I played Dad per usual. Mm-hmm. I finished up The Bear on Hulu/Netflix. Hulu FX.
I've been heavily recommended that.
Have you finished it? Best
friends. No, I've not started it yet. I'm like, that's my next thing, because my buddy highly, like, he's one of my best friends from high school. When he gives the reco, I'm in. So I just need to set the time. Because once I start, that's the thing too. Once I start, I'm in. Like, I will bust through a show. And I usually don't crack that door open during the baseball season because I know it will take over. But yeah, once I crack the door open, I will finish watching it. So I've heard it's great. It's a show, right?
It's absolutely fantastic. It's eight episodes.
Eight episodes.
The shows themselves they're not an hour long. They're only like 20 to 30 minutes. So they're a quick burn.
I'm telling you, it'll be one night though. Like, that's all.
I hear you. I love that. Yeah. Brandy and I can definitely do that. Back when we were hanging out at home, you know, during her pregnancy and whatnot, we could crush stuff in no time.
That's about the only major difference in terms of like media consumption and stuff that we like and we do, that Jen and I don't fully see eye to eye. I'm always pedal to the metal. I can do like 5, 6, 7, 8 episodes in a watch. She's more a 2 or 3 and then back off, which is probably for the better. Let's be honest. You don't remember things with a binge. It's just an amalgamous blob and you can pick away a few parts. It is better to slow it down, but I get hooked and I'm like, put it in the veins. Let's go. Yeah. I see it's 8 episodes here. I've got it favorited on or added to my watch list on.
Have you ever eaten an Italian beef sandwich, Chicago style?
I have.
Okay.
I have.
All right, cool. Yeah, this will make you want to make those quite a bit.
How are you enjoying the move, by the way?
Whew, not going to lie. I'm eating two of those beef sandwiches a week.
Are you eating the lasagna cake? I think you guys call it pizza over there, but you're wrong. Yeah. It's lasagna cake.
So my two favorite spots are both Thin Slice still. Good. So, you know, I don't get me wrong. I still get, you know, I get the the eccentricness, I guess, to try it every once in a while.
It's the thickness, I guess. Yeah. I mean, I don't really like it, if I'm being 100% honest, but just call it what it is. It's lasagna cake. That's what it is. It's not pizza. And so I just like things to be called what they are.
I also knock its leftover quality, you know, to reheat it. Obviously would have to do it in the oven, but then you've got to like try and perfect that itself. So it's almost like recooking something. You've got to like really tend to it, which kind of sucks. With thin slice, I'll enjoy it cold. You can just throw it in the microwave. You can throw it in the oven. You can do whatever you want with it.
You can throw it in the air fryer, by the way, I learned.
Air fryer,
excellent way to fire up the reheated pizza. Because I'm big. I'm a cold. I'm a hot. I'm an oven. I'm a never microwave, though, because it makes it rubbery, I feel like. But I learned that the air fryer does come correct with it. We're recent air fryer converts, and we're putting everything in there. You know, we put Charlotte in there the other day just to see what would happen with our dog, and she came out looking better, you know, and like
she came out looking like a Chicago dog.
Yeah, and I was like, well, maybe we should just take a little nibble.
Yeah,
we always call her different things, like food stuff, like a potato. So it's
sure. Oh yeah, of course. Brooklyn's nickname is Bean. I don't know.
That's actually Bean.
Oddly now we're like living in Chicago now, and she's Bean, and I don't know.
That's funny that you said. That's one of Char's many, many nicknames.
Little Bean,
or the Bean Dog.
You are right about the microwave though. I would rather have it just cold versus like reheating in the microwave. If you can't do it in the you said the air fryer. I haven't done that, but if you can't do it in the oven, I would just probably eat it right out of the
fridge. Just go cold. Yep. Mm-hmm. Anyway, we've not talked any baseball. We both said before we recorded, like, we could go under an hour, bro. We could if we needed to. Like, it's fine. We could both just get out of here real quick. And then we did a rant. I did a rant on the delineation between halves, that they don't have to be equal. And then we just did a Chicago food. So maybe we should get into it. You will now take over the timeline or the rundown here. So go ahead and get us started with the big news. The ones we got to talk. We got to talk.
Let's get into the fun and exciting stuff. First of all, do you think he gets traded?
No.
Okay.
Not at this deadline. No, okay. I think that's drummed up by Boris to try to light the fire and the urgency. They have no need to. If the perfect deal comes along, they might. I will not say unequivocally no, because there's no reason to box myself into that corner. But if I were betting, I would bet a lot of money on no. They just have too much time to find the perfect deal. And I don't think it's going to take 2 weeks to materialize.
And on top of that, don't you think that doing it now, the extra, let's call it a half season versus next year or the next year's trade deadline, the package isn't going to get much smaller, right? They're still going to get pretty much the ample amount that they want.
Exactly. It's not going to make a major change to it. And I'm really curious about how they're going to make it work with, you know, I really think, you know, you've been seeing a lot of these deals float around with like Patrick Corbin included. I really think it's going to have to be something like that. I just don't think you can get an accurate deal for Soto straight up to where you're asking a team for their five of their like eight top prospects, even if it's a deep system. And that's a realistic ask, but no team can realistically do that, because then, Maddie, you also have to pay the $450 million on top of that. So you can't pay all that prospect capital and the money. It has to be defrayed a little bit with a Corbin or something like that. I keep saying it's going to be a supercharged Betts deal. So take everything about the Betts deal and supercharge it. There's more time under contract for Soto. He's better than Betts, even though Betts is amazing. So it'll be a better return than Verdugo and Downs. But that's the kind of thing it's going to be, where David Price kind of offset the money. So too will like a Patrick Corbin or something else that they might. Corbin makes the obvious sense though, because if Strasburg is busted, you can just get insurance money for him. So I think Corbin is the kind of contract that you're definitely going to see included there in that deal. I would be surprised if there's nothing tacked on to that deal.
I find it so intriguing because it is. It also is similar to the Betts deal, like you mentioned, because there's factors that are going to basically make a team a qualifier when it comes to obtaining him. Yes. You know, you've already got a bar set at 15 years, $440 million.
Yeah.
That's not good enough. So you already know I've got to be able to pony up X amount of dollars in years.
I think you have to at least have 350 for 10. I think he needs a $35 million a year. I think that's he's not getting anything lower than that. The 400, whatever. The reason that he balked at that was because the per year.
Sub 30.
I know people say like
sub 30, man.
I would never turn that down. Yeah, but I'm not taking 29 mil.
When if you're Juan Seager Soto, you're not taking 32. Less than 30 million a year.
Yeah, and Seager got 32 and a half, and I like Seager. Seager's a G. Soto at 24 years old or 26, wherever, whatever he's going to be when the contract would start, has to get more than Corey Seager. I'm sorry. He just has to.
And if gas prices are going up, that's not me peeing. That's just me filling up some wine if you heard that.
That
sorry.
Is true. I can see it there. Your audio can only confirm. Is not peeing.
If gas prices are going up that crazy, Juan Soto, look at the inflation that contracts are going to be going up in the economy. So I'm absolutely for it. I even posted when he turned down the deal. I don't remember which beat reporter it was that I quote tweeted, and it was nothing towards the beat reporter, of course. Shout out to them for reporting it. But it was the gecko from Wall Street. Like, greed is good. Greed is right. Greed is like, go get it, Soto. Like, people that are upset because he made his own decision is just ridiculous.
They have no talent. Like, they would never face such a situation. Of course you would take that. You work an office job. Nothing against you. I'm not rich and famous or anything either, too. So, of course, I would take it, too. I don't have any talent. So, like, duh. You're like, that's not saying anything to say you would never turn down 400 million. You don't have any power to leverage for more. And yes, and the thing of it is too, they're playing right into the hands of the Nats putting it out there. They want people to see that it was for something and say, how dare he turn that down? What an a-hole. I would never. And it's like, you are not understanding the context in the slightest. Yeah. And it's not that he's going poor. It's about the market and what you're worth and knowing your worth. Absolutely ridiculous.
So I'm going to segue into – I'm going to keep it Scott Boras, actually, and skip a couple of our players that we have to discuss because Boras was in the news again recently talking about Michael Conforto. He said four teams have made calls on him now that the draft has been completed because Michael Conforto was basically tied to a compensation pick. So – now that that has come and gone and Conforto is more healthy, he's getting, you know, coming off of the shoulder surgery, potentially he could be ready in late August, early September. Boras comes out and says four teams have called. One of them is the Blue Jays. We know how Boras likes to use his leverage anytime he can get it. My question for you is, do you have, he's available anywhere, right? That any redraft league that you're in, do you think that there's going to potentially be a nice landing spot like the Blue Jays that could be optimal for him? Do you think when he comes back, he's going to be viable enough to use in fantasy baseball? What are your thoughts on just the whole Conforto?
I think if Conforto's healthy, he can be good off rip. Like, it's all about the health. I mean, there'll be some ramp up, of course. And, you know, he wasn't very good last year, but I don't think he was fully healthy. I think he's better than the 100 OPS plus player that Conforto was last year. He's a career 123. I think he could come back and be like a 110 to 115 off rip. That's kind of where I would mentally put him, assuming he's healthy, which is what we would be assuming with Conforto coming back. Outside of Toronto, I can't think of an obvious fit right now, partly because we have the deadline coming up. So many of those holes could be filled, right? Like, you know, maybe the Phillies, but I don't know. Are they going to address it a different way? Maybe they go out and they prioritize somebody who can play better defense a bit, even though they'd be replacing Bryce Harper ostensibly. You would want to get somebody amazing, but you just might not be able to, obviously. So you go for somebody that's like a Michael A. Taylor or an Andrew Benintendi in Philly, and maybe they don't want Conforto, who could probably hit, not like Harper, but at his best could do a reasonable Harper replication, but with crappy defense again. So I don't know if they're going to keep that spot open in hopes of getting him. Will the Jays even do that? Or will they go seek something out? Andrew Benintendi would look like a pretty good fit over there, too. Maybe the Padres, right? Padres always seem to be in the mix for guys. They can move so many players around. They could have an opening. But Tatis, ostensibly. By the way, do you think Tatis comes back at short or outfield? I bet outfield, personally.
I think that they want... and then it's like in parenthesis, ED wanted him to be in the outfield, but now like they're almost getting a logjam there if Mazzara's hitting, which he kind of is. He's putting the bat on the ball. Will Myers is coming back. Now you've got Ruiz who has been looking good since he's been up, and he's the speedster, and he's been electric, etc.
Maybe they just don't have any sort of opening then, because then they wait for Tatis to get back, and then they already have extras. So they're off my board then for outfield. I had listed them in that sheet I told you I made, so that's what I'm looking at right now. You know, the Yankees too, but I don't think the Yankees are going to wait around for like a
couple. No, yeah. Philly's the first option I looked at right when you said that. I was clicking on them at Roster Resource on FanGraphs.
That's the one I could see. If they just do fill-ins, because here's the thing too. I think, you know, we'll see where Derek Hall is over the next month or so, but he's kind of hanging on for dear life right now. He has a 32% K rate and a 3% walk rate. That 126 WRC plus is headed downward. So what they could do is still get a Benintendi or a Michael A. Taylor, put him in the outfield right now. Then when Conforto's available, if Derek Hall is flopping, boom, he takes Derek Hall's spot and goes to DH or something like that. So
what about Tampa Bay?
I think Toronto and Philly are the fits. If the price is right, which I think it would be, right? Because if ostensibly it would be for the rest of this year and maybe another year, I think they could get a discount. They're always open to doing stuff and getting premium talent on the cheap. I think they make some sense too. The toughest part about this is that the deadline will happen, and then there'll be another few weeks until Conforto's even ready. Because you put in the outline late August, early September availability.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, and as we saw last year, go ahead.
No, you go ahead. I'm sorry.
What we saw last year with Atlanta is being able to acquire via trade before Conforto would be called upon. Eddie Rosario, the Duvall, what Atlanta did, Jock Peterson. You can acquire some of these outfield bats for pretty fucking cheap. Right. It's obtainable. It's something that can be done. It's not going to cost you like a high leverage reliever or a big arm that's, you know, eating innings, et cetera. So, or the superstar players that get traded, obviously.
Yeah.
And, you know, that could obviously hurt his market. So you know, maybe Tampa Bay would be a decent spot, but that would be like the worst case scenario though, for fantasy inputs, because then you're going to definitely see him in a platoon, and that's a bad park, and it's a tough place to hit. But a
strong side platoon. The park is the scary part. At least it would be strong side.
What about Houston?
Houston could.
Their outfield's kind of lagging.
So I guess it would really depend on where we're at with the return of Brantley by then. Ostensibly, he should be back, but the shoulder is back flaring. That's an issue. It's a known issue. It's kind of nebulous as to when he's supposed to come back anyway. And right now they've got Chaz McCormick and Jake Myers consistently starting. They kind of have two spots. So they could go get, I'll keep naming the same guys because I do think Benny and a healthy Michael A. Taylor are two of the best outfielders to be available, or even like a Whit Merrifield. Casey is where you want to shop if you need an outfielder. I think they could get one of those guys and still maybe be in on Conforto down the line too, if Brantley is still nicked.
I heard you talking to Mason about Whit Merrifield to the Dodgers.
I'm telling you, that is like a perfect fit for the Chris Taylor fill-in. And he's been good for half the season. It's just that
it got me excited, so
comically bad that it's hard to tell on his bottom line numbers. So yeah, I think Whit to the Dodgers, I think that's a fit right there.
Absolutely love it. Speaking of the Houston Astros, continuing with them, Yordan Alvarez activated. Get him back in if you haven't already. And let's get into the Mariners before we go into some other topics. Kyle Lewis, he's due back tomorrow, which would be Friday, July 22nd. And then Mitch Haniger is set to do his rehab assignment. Now, both of them coming back with Julio Rodriguez, and you also have other outfielders there with Jesse Winker and the combination of Haniger and Lewis. You're going to have a little bit of a logjam, and then you have Frazier/Ty France kind of swapping around. Dylan Moore is obviously going to go back to the Pine full time. Do you have any concerns that this causes any sort of logjam for Lewis, Winker, or Haniger, or do you think all of them are safe? I know J-Rod is not part of this discussion.
But yeah, I think like Winker can just be platooned. You know, so that'll take away some of the at-bats against lefties, and then all the other guys are righty. So that part's fine. I think it'll play itself out, though, because you're still dealing with some guys who have some pretty dodgy health track records, including, I mean, all three of them, Winker, Haniger, and Lewis. They're you know, healing or have been recently hurt, or they have history from previous years, too. So I think Haniger's have been a bit unluckier. Like, I don't see chronic with him. Obviously, you know, the testicle one was awful to even think about. And then he comes back from his COVID this year, gets a hit on his first at bat, and rips his strained calf coming out of the box on that. That's pretty unlucky. Kyle Lewis's body has betrayed him, you know, throughout his career at this point. And Winker also isn't playing that well. So I do think he'll garner plenty of playing time. I don't think he's going to lose a ton. But if push came to shove and everyone stayed healthy and everyone was playing well, I do think Winker would actually start to lose a little bit of time against righties, assuming it matched up with Lewis and Haniger both killing righties. Because you're right, J-Rod obviously not going anywhere. What an absolute monster he is.
You know, I know in the fantasy baseball industry, excluding what the common person watched on the Home Run Derby or it just anything from Monday and Tuesday on, you know, on Fox TV, us in the fantasy community, there was already on multiple podcasts, where do you think he's going to go? Where's Julio Rodriguez? And we're like, well, he's going to go in the first round. And at first, when we first started hearing that, I was like, well, maybe that's not that crazy anymore. Now it's like, is he with Acuna? Is he with Trey Turner? Is he
now it's like, Heiner? How high?
And, you know, and we just already kind of being in on that camp and understanding how great he's been, seeing the swag and confidence and smile and communication and everything.
He's got it.
Yes. Yep. And you see it and it kind of stapled it for me. And I was like,
I said this, I think I tweeted it out. I'm not sure, but like, this is why we in the fantasy circle draft these guys high. Now it's not a high hit rate, even within this year, right? Like, you know, his teammate, his organizational mate, Jared Kelnick got hype and has been a major flop. Bobby Witt took a little time to get going. Right. And you can go down the whole laundry list and they haven't been super successful off rip in recent years. I think even, you know, Wander Franco injury, obviously.
Look at Joe Adell. He's supposed to Adell for it.
Has supposed to been, you know, and there's many more before him, you know, Corey Patterson ran or walked. So Joe Adell could run to being a bust, but like, you know, and then there's plenty more, but we take those shots and we bet on that upside because of what Julio Rodriguez does. And it's not always a great bet. I understand the people who just say hands off on the rookies because I don't want to catch all the duds for that one chance to get Julio. But if you ever wonder why the certain group that goes for the rookies every year does, it's for the Julio, because that win is so much better. It's so much, so much better of a high than all the losses are of a low. That's how I view it, at least.
He's an absolute unicorn.
He is. I mean, he's unbelievable. We haven't had one of these, like, who was the last, like, just
Acuna when he did it.
Was it Acuna or Soto? Didn't Soto come after him?
Soto did it, but with less bags.
That's true. I meant, like, all-world rookie from
sure. But the thing is with Soto is nobody knew who the fuck he was.
A lot of people
he was like, yeah, he's being called up instead of Victor Robles. And we're like,
19, who? Yes, 19-year-old from AA. What? Who is this guy? If you weren't a prospect maven, you were a little bit behind the curve. I say that as somebody who had to learn about him in the early 2018. Like, I did know about him before he came up, but I cannot pretend to have known about him before the 2018 season. I learned about him as he was raking in the minors. I was like, who's this guy? Like, this guy's crazy. Is he a flash in the pan or whatever? And I had people like, no, you stupid idiot. You don't know who he is. You're going to need to know who he is. He's so good. Like, I was lucky that I had some of his biggest proponents kind of in my circle. One of them being Craig Goldstein over at Baseball Perspectives, who I believe coined the Childish Bambino nickname.
Love it.
I believe it was Craig Goldstein. So anyway, absolutely, he was like hyping him up. So that, but yeah, Julio Rodriguez is why we chase here. And, you know, Witt hasn't really been a failure either. Like, no. I paid a premium, right? I paid the min at Vegas. I paid a fourth round. I got 13 and 17 with a 254. I don't feel bad about where I'm at.
I'd be happy with it. I drafted in that Vegas main event that you're talking about. I drafted Chris Bryant. Nowhere near as productive as Bobby Witt has been. God, so
I got saved from Bryant, man. I loved him, and I was moving him up with the Coors boost as well. And there was just always somebody who liked him better in virtually every room I was in, except for two. I got him in two leagues, and I don't necessarily regret those because he's been good when he's played.
Sure.
But man, I know I was with you there thinking like he's going to be a god because he's a great player in the best hitting environment ever. And of course, what you don't even have to take an L on that though. The body betrayed him again, which I know is part of the package that comes with him, but I don't know. I've always been a Chris Bryant stan, so maybe I have a little bit too Rosie of the glasses on to not hate on him.
It's okay. All right, let's put our boots on the ground.
Let's
How
it.
Frustrating was it for you to click on your NFBC site and you go to My Teams and you click on your team and you go to Set Transactions and you look at your pitchers that are available, and it's not to the NFBC's doing or their fault whatsoever, and it's not because of MLB reporters' faults or anything like that, but you're trying to find information. So you'll search on Twitter and you're looking at your team to find a little baseball next to your starting pitchers. Yes. To see who's getting to go this weekend. And we still have no fucking clue for some of these guys. So I'm sure that with me speaking with my frustration, you've kind of had this same feeling, and people listening to this that play at the NFBC have also had this same frustration set in right after the All-Star break and during the All-Star break when we're trying to figure out how we're going to set our lineups for this weekend, this rare, unique weekend, so to call it. So how are you attacking this and what have you done?
It's always tough because you want to at least have the information to make the decision of who's starting. And then sometimes you're like, well, I don't even know who's starting. So now I'm making a decision on, will they even get the start? For example, and I just learned, I didn't check the text because I'm busy with you right now. but I saw a text from my co-owner, Colin Weatherwax, in my other main. And I bet it says something about Cutter Crawford being named, but we made a decision on him earlier today. I'm like, do we start him or not? But he wasn't in the list. We didn't have a little baseball next to him, so we didn't start him. Now, I think we could still change it because the guy that we did start, Tyler Wells, which we didn't really want to do against the Yankees, they haven't played yet. So I think we can still make the change. Yeah. But the problem was, like, there was so little information out there today. You just got to fly a little bit blind. We're almost spoiled, right? Because pre-internet, obviously, we dealt with a lot of blind stuff we didn't have information for. But these days, we expect all of it to be there, and it can be tough. And then you're making decisions on, like, is this guy even going to play? Do I take a shot on him? At least with this one, it's 4 days, and actually, like, 3.5, because hardly any teams even played today. So if you sit somebody who ends up playing, it'll sting, but it's not going to kill you for a whole week at least.
Let's try and help out the listeners as much as we can. And I was just vividly scrolling through to see if any more rotations were set. And the Dodgers did set their rotation for the next 4 days. We already knew Mitch White was starting tonight against the Giants. The next three are going to be Tyler Anderson, Julio Urias, and Clayton Kershaw. So if you have Tony Gonsolin, get him out for this week. He's going to be a two-step next week. So get the Catman out of your lineup. And I'm looking, and I actually have him starting right now in one of my leagues. And I'm going to put in Evan Phillips for him. I'm not a home.
How good has Evan Phillips been, by the way?
Yeah, he's been awesome, dude. He's been
another one that is just find and develop.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so Ohtani. His stretch, if you play at the NFBC, you'll know you can either choose to use him as a pitcher or a hitter. With this being a unique situation where the team is only playing over the weekend, you could either choose one of these options. You can choose him to be used as your utility hitter, and he'll face Charlie Morton, Kyle Wright, and Ian Anderson, or you can use him as the starting pitcher on Friday at Atlanta. Now, I wanted to break down how productive and what you could get from three starts as a hitter versus the one start as a pitcher. Obviously, I was going to ask you, is it about finding which categorical need you need the most, right? I think it's going to be a rare situation where a team is just so great in wins and strikeouts and ratios and whip and ERA, where it's like, I just can't use Ohtani at all at starting pitcher this week.
Yeah.
And I think it's just optimal to roll him at starting pitcher, right?
I think so too. I think that's where you're starting. The default is yes, SP for Ohtani this week for the week. You know, it's just for the weekend. And then you go from there. Like, if you have extenuating circumstances where you nailed pitching and you hit, you know, your aces hit, and then you hit some of the newcomers like a Kyle Wright, you've been on the Martin Perez train or whatever. Maybe you have an alternate scenario where you're just starving for offense. But in the most cases, I think you're going with Ohtani as a starter. And I think he's made a case to make the decision pretty difficult every week on most teams. Whereas last year, we were just slam dunking him into the lineup, even though he was still pitching pretty well. This year, he's been so premium with the Ks And he's already matched his win total, even though they're not having a great season. They got off to a good start and then had the 14-game loser, and now they're trash. But, like, now Ohtani has made it such a difficult decision. Do you think that every site should allow you to use him as both all the time so that he is the number one overall? No.
Yeah, you'll break the game. He's the Wayne Gretzky.
That's the point.
He is the Wayne Gretzky.
That's the point. No. You should break the game and implement third round. We were told that's what he was going to do when he was coming over.
Right.
Why are we now?
I get what you're saying. I think he should.
I think he should be able to use all of it. And he goes number one overall every year.
Yeah.
And then we do third round reversal to take away some of that because you are getting such a big edge. We should probably do third round reversal anyway. For those that don't know, is that you go, you know, 1-12 or 1-15, 15-1 and then 15-1 again, and then start up the snake from there. And that's done in football a lot more, I think, because that number one running back, or in some cases these days, wide receiver, was such an overwhelming advantage that the numbers said that the third round reversal made more sense. But I think all of Ohtani should count. Like, why punish him because he quote unquote breaks the game? He's the best player. We should get his full value.
The way you say it, too, with the passion, I get it. Like, he's Ohtani. If you drafted Ohtani, you got Ohtani. You get your cake, and you fucking get to eat it, too.
You
still got to
draft the rest of the team, too. You're not guaranteed to anything. Obviously, it's a big win to get him. So if you draw that number one, you are in a big advantage. And you know there would be tryhards out there that would not take him. There would be some people that would just want to be, look at me and not take him. And by the way, there would be no justification for that.
Right.
There would be like, it is, it's not even a subjective thing.
He's a
objectively, if you got to get everything that he had without having to change him, you just put him in the lineup and he gets it. You get everything. He's far and away the number one pick by a mile.
Do you think they potentially maybe even ponder the idea if someone calls them and says, what would it take to get Ohtani? Do they do it?
Why not? Yeah, why not?
They should.
I mean, here's the tough part, though.
He's such a legacy player. Like, he's a statue. You build a statue for guys like this.
Absolutely. The lack of incentive for the Angels will come in the fact that he doesn't make a ton of money. One of the reasons that we got him so early, and thank you to Ohtani for this, by the way. He was essentially punished for coming over this early. They have a system set up to avoid all their players leaving. And I understand it too, by the way. You know, the MPB doesn't just want to be a feeder league. So they've set up things to try to make it so, like, hey, you know, we want you to get your bag, but, like, we don't want everyone to leave, you know, F the MLB a little bit. And I get it. So if you want to do that, you want to come over at 23 without having, you know, stayed in the country and played for X number of years, I think it's 7 or 8 years, then you have to go on the rookie structure. And that was basically a punishment that was instituted for him to kind of make the decision harder. He bet on himself, figuring, hey, if I'm as good as I say, I'll become so much more than just baseball. I'll make plenty of money. So he did it. I mean, so he's making 5.5 mil this year, which isn't peanuts. He's not hungry. But if he was paid a standard come over from Asia deal, he'd probably be making like 15, 20 mil this year. At the very least, I would think. So keep that in mind. That's probably a disincentive for the Angels to trade him, though, because of how cheap he is. Usually, if you're going to trade somebody like that, you got to be getting some big money off the books, or at least some perceived money. And yes, he will be a free agent after next year, but maybe by then they're figuring, hey, we won't be the most inept organization ever and we can figure something out. So I think you at least have to listen, but I don't know if that they're going to be that incentivized.
And for the listeners, if you're not familiar with what's going on contract wise for Ohtani next year, if the Angels didn't trade him this trade deadline, he's going to go into the offseason arb eligible. They're going to give him that. They're going to take it.
He'll get like 20 mil.
Yeah, it'll be over 20 million now. He's actually a really unique case too, so I think he'll get a little bit of a bumper going in to argue as a starting pitcher, I would assume.
It's going to be
interesting. Yeah. So especially cuz when you were talking about his pitching stuff, 35.4% K rate right now. It's just insane, man.
He's bananas.
What we're watching, he's just the greatest athlete in the world. Like, it's just so cool.
Best player in the game by miles.
It's not even – I can't believe you could say – No, it isn't, or it shouldn't be, and I wouldn't even tweet somebody back that wanted to even discuss that. Yeah.
By the way, so Mookie got 27 mil in ARM in 2020. Yeah. So my 20 might be underselling what Ohtani's going to get. He's two players.
Yeah, it's very interesting. So yeah, if you have Ohtani and you're just not absolutely dire straits for offensive categories, like from the get-go, roll Ohtani as a starting pitcher if you have that option in the NFBC. Okay, so we were talking about how we got a little bit bored yesterday, and I was scrolling through, well, what do I do on DraftKings? What do I do? You know, so DK Sportsbook was emailing me and trying to just get me to pound team futures, player futures, prop bets, anything they can get a hold of, because they didn't know who was starting for, you know, the starting pitchers either. So they can't set lines, right? There wasn't MLB games to even kind of bet on yesterday because
there was nothing.
Teams weren't giving the information. So I was looking at that while coming up with our outline, and I wanted to ask you, because I kind of want to parlay, which is just it's for fun, obviously, for one. But there was two things that stood out to me, and I'll get into the pitching prop itself, but it was Corbin Burnes at plus 450, and then last year to lead the NFL in passing, it was Patrick Mahomes at plus 325. So now he's plus 800, which is just LOL. Yes. So I was like, okay, well, I could get a little greedy here and parlay both of those. And it's like, it pays like plus 4,800, which is like, obviously you don't need to bet a lot to win a lot. And exactly. I don't even think it's that hard. Because
no, it's not outlandish, right? You're not asking for the moon for this to happen.
Right, right. And so when looking at these strikeout leaders as of going into today, because the top four are Dylan Cease, Shane McClanahan, Garrett Cole, and Corbin Burnes. Mm-hmm. Dylan Cease is the leader with 150, and he also has the lowest odds. He's the favorite to win at plus 275. Bet $100, you win a $275. Now, Shane McClanahan has 147 strikeouts, and so does Garrett Cole, and Corbin Burnes has 144. But Corbin Burnes has the biggest juice out of all of them, or I'm sorry, McClanahan
second.
Does,
but yeah. McClanahan is because perceived innings
and mileage, and so the thing that was interesting to me is looking at if you just go to teams and divisions and highest strikeout rates, the Reds, the Pirates, the Cubs, they far succeed some of these other teams. Even like with Cease, he's going to face the Guardians. They have the lowest strikeout rate. It's like sub 20%.
The Royals don't K either.
And they don't as well. And, you know, the deeper you go in the season, sometimes the stuff kind of wears off just a little bit, right? The effectiveness and stuff like that. Wear and tear and mileage, especially for young pitchers like Cease and McClanahan. Burnes, I guess, would be in that same situation as well versus Cole. But Cole and McClanahan are going to be facing the AL East, you know, majority of the time, the remainder of the season. And I just look at Corbin Burnes at plus 450 while only being six strikeouts back of Cease. And I think that's just a mistake. It's a blemish. I wanted to ask you if you thought so you're in agreement.
Burnes far and away. First off, okay. I'm never going to take a favorite on one of these.
I'm going to bet
personally.
I'll do it. I'm in Illinois now, baby. I wish I could.
Yeah. See, in Texas, I can't do everything I want. I don't have the freedom to spend my money how I want. You know, all this talking about freedom and you can't do anything here. We got a damn poker game named after us and you can't play it anywhere in the damn state. So, okay. Anyway, but Burnes is the guy here. He's third out of the four in odds, like you said, as far as the longest odds at plus 450 with McClanahan at plus 500. And again, I don't think they're going to super dial down his innings, by the way. I really do think McClanahan is going to make like 32 starts. They might start trimming the innings within the starts. I also think they're a team that's savvy enough to do a pitch count, like an overall pitch count that they want him for the season, not an innings count. Because why would you punish somebody who is efficient on innings just to deal with some sort of artificial inning number? If he gets a bunch of like seven pitch innings, those don't count the same as a 20 pitch inning. And I think that the Rays are smart enough for that. But anyway, I still can't bet him because you never know with the Rays.
Yeah.
If they got a 10 game lead somehow, like on the division, which would be outlandish, right? Because they're not even leading the division. They're 13 games back. So maybe I shouldn't have said that. Let's say the wild card. Let's say they got like a 10 game lead on the wild card. They would start dialing things back. We know they would. We know he'd be having like some four inning starts. So Burnes is the guy, 100%. They have three top nine teams in strikeout rate against righties in the Central. the Pirates at second, the Reds at fifth, and then the Cubs at 10th, but technically 9th because the Brewers are 9th and he can't face his own team. I'd hammer Burns on that.
And here's the other thing too. Just the last point on all of this. When you mentioned those teams, the Cubs, Pirates, and Reds are all sellers. What happens to the Cubs if they lose Ian Happ and or Wilson Contreras? What happens to the Pirates if Brian Reynolds is healthy and gets traded? What happens to the Reds if Brandon Drury or Jesse Winker? The poor man's Jesse Winker, Tyler Naquin gets traded. So there's just, and Brandon Drury, you know, I think that these, yeah, I did. That was the first. Sorry. Yeah, he's the big one. So I see these offenses getting worse.
Yeah, that's a great point.
The season goes on too. So yeah, if you are in a state or if you're heading to Las Vegas for a vacation, Corbin Burns at plus 450 take a look at that. And then the last ones, this is kind of a mulligan. This is just for some fun.
Since we got smoked on our,
I chose the Dodgers to win, which is pretty chalky, but Homer like. So I mean, I can't really fault myself. They are like, still the current favorites.
Still a smart pick. Like, let's be honest.
Now, when looking, I listed all the way down to the Giants. So, to give the most juice, these are the teams that I think have a shot. Right?
Yes.
With what the Mariners have been doing and the way they're trending and what they could do remainder of the season, I like their rotation. I like their bullpen at plus 5,000. I think that they're somebody that should be mentioned. The San Francisco Giants. That was my dog Murray. So maybe he's agreement.
Yeah.
And then, you know, it pains me to say this, even though the Giants haven't been playing as good as we thought, just because of Farhan's AD and how they do the analytics, and they're so smart now. I still think that there's a shot for them to be ornery down the stretch. So I included those two teams at the bottom at plus 5,000. But looking at the odds overall, if you had to choose, like the Blue Jays at plus 1,500, you think that there's some interest. The Brewers at 1,700, Padres at 2,200. They get Tatis back. The rotation's kind of, gets a little bit stronger. You like that?
My crew there, yeah.
I'm what you're looking at.
And, you know, obviously it can go hand in hand with the Burns one there too. Obviously, I suspect that he's going to be beasting. Our boy B. Woody was looking a little bumpy early on, you know, had the little numbness in his fingers. He's come back. He's looked excellent. Now that could flare back up. There is concern about that, but I love the double ace there. Peralta will eventually be back. He's a wild card though. So I would not put too much stock into Peralta when making any sort of bet. Anything that he can do should be viewed as bonus. If he's tipping the scales as to why you're making a bet, I would not do that. But I like Lauer and Ashby too. Yes, Lauer's come back down from where he was at the beginning of the year. That's okay. 2021 Eric Lauer is perfectly fine. He had a 3.19 ERA, 1.14 whip. I didn't need him to be a sub 3 ERA guy to be excited about him. And Ashby as a fifth. He's their fourth starter right now. They had that Jason Alexander guy there. When Peralta comes back, he can be the fifth, and then he'll go to the bullpen in the playoffs. We know that Hader and Devin Williams is one of the best 1-2 punches there is. Their offense has greatly underperformed. It's been bad at times, but it's bubbling under the surface. Like, there's good talent there to where it runs deep enough that Hunter Renfro bats seventh. That dude's a 30 home run hitter with his eyes closed. Like, I really like Hunter Renfro. So when he's your seven hitter, I think they'll make a move. I think they'll get something impact at the deadline on the offensive side. I like the Brewers there a lot. And then the other team I like, as far as a little bit more of a favorite, because again, I will never go straight favorite. I would not take the Dodgers there just because of the money. I believe that they have a great shot to win, but I'm going to go elsewhere. My favorite would be the Astros at plus 500. They're the third team on the board. I can get behind this team. I still think there's a lot to like. I know, I'm sorry, but listen, we're trying to make money here. And this is a good crew. And they need something by way of a lefty. They have no lefties in the bullpen again. I think they're going to get Andrew Chafin from my Tigers. I think they'll get a bat somewhere, and they're going to be pesky again. And everyone hates them. I get it. They're kind of the evil empire now because the Yankees haven't done anything in 15 years. So look for the Astros to be there in October the way they always are, causing trouble.
I heavily root for the Yankees now when they're playing these intense series against the Astros. That's where I'm at.
Because you hate the Astros so much.
That's where I'm at. I was at game one of 2017 World Series against the Astros as a Dodgers fan. People don't forget.
You want them out. You want them out. And I understand. I understand. Like I said, they've built themselves into a little bit of a Darth Vader character.
Plus 500 is tasty for them. they can address outfield help, right? We talked about Jake Meyers and Chaz McCormick. They can flip that and fix it, and no problem. The rotation is deep, and it's only getting deeper with McCullers coming back.
Exactly.
They're going to have the problem of what are we doing with Odorizzi, et cetera. Their bullpen, I think that that could be a place for them to address as well. But
and they will. They'll get a lefty for sure, I think, and then maybe one other righty. I think, like I said, they'll go shopping in the Central, get Chafin from the Tigers, Benintendi from the Royals, another reliever from some other team, and then they're in business. I don't think they're going to do sweeping moves, but they're going to do small supplemental moves that are going to really help the Astros.
The Mets seem pretty rich at plus 700, huh?
That's a good one, too. I could have easily mentioned them. I went one in each league, but if my favorite was almost the Mets. I didn't want to give two NL ones. Look, I know the whole Mets going to Mets stuff, right? We're talking about it every year, and it is tired, but at the same time, it does kind of happen every year. So it's like one of those things where you have to kind of give a little credence to it, but they're going to be adding Jacob freaking DeGrom at some point, ideally. Again, though, you got to be careful if that's what you're hinging your bet on. You have to be comfortable believing that they can win as is. If you think they need DeGrom to win, then you can't make the bet because he's just too much of a wild card right now to really know what we're going to get. So you have to like the team as is. And then DeGrom is an add-on, obviously, that could be huge. And who knows what they're going to do at the deadline. Don't be surprised if they shot big and add another premium arm. Like if they somehow pull Frankie Montas out of their butts, I wouldn't even be surprised.
I want them to get greedy in the offensive department. I think that they can nice do it too. In multiple spots, and they
agreed.
Should.
Wilson Contreras.
Go do it. Load the fuck up and try and act like the Phillies for once. Well, on the offensive side, just do it. Okay, so we are running out of time here. So I'm looking
still
through
under an hour, but we can get through the rest of this. Go.
You think so? Okay, all right. I was going to like just –
No,
rip out
speed through it.
Okay.
Ready.
So there was three teams looking at, we were talking earlier what we were doing in the during the All-Star breaks, and I was looking into teams that could trade their current closer and potentially have somebody that would fill in and be the closer down the stretch. Unfortunate part is a couple of these teams, they're shitty. We don't even know how many opportunities they're going to get as a whole, but
true.
Kansas City Royals, they have Scott Barlow. The Oakland A's are rolling out Lou Trevino, and the Pittsburgh Pirates have the best of all of them is David Bednar, who has been in and out of trade rumors of late. For me, I'll just give my opinion. I think the Yuri De Los Santos would probably be the easiest one to define out of all of these. Because when we look at the A's, right? Are you it? What?
Yeah, but it's also the least likely to move, in my opinion. So I agree with you that he is the most likely fill-in, like the obvious one and the best one. But I think that the Pirates don't have to be motivated to move Bednar. Yes,
and they've mentioned that too.
Yeah, it's like, yes, you should move a reliever as you're with the Pirates, but they don't have to force it. They have him through 2026. They got years to figure this out. So I agree with you there, but you really should focus. If you're desperate for saves, you need to focus on the KC and Oakland situations. I'd go Stomat, and then I'd go off the board for Oakland. Ooh. I'd go AJ Puck. Because I think he's going to be.
I didn't even have him. He's like obviously the clear best guy too. Best stuff. And I didn't even put him on. Like I had shitty Danny Jimenez returning soon.
Well, Jimenez,
there's question marks too. Look at all the question marks.
Because you knew like what do I do with this team? I don't know. And there is the whole like. Saves push up your ARB numbers. They might do stupid crap with that with Puck, but. I think they can avoid that. Like, I don't think they have to pinch those pennies. I think they can afford to give him a few bucks if he gets eight saves down the stretch. But we don't know. So you got to be careful there. But I like him for the bang for buck. I think he's $1, $2 if you're speculating. Do it before the deadline too, by the way, because you know Lou Trevino's gone. There's no way he's not getting traded. So you go $2 on AJ Puck, hold him for 2 weeks. If you do it this week, you hold him 2 weeks through 8-2. By the way, the deadline's on 8-2 this year, August 2nd, because the 31st is a Sunday and they want to give an extra day on the 1st for some reason. So August 2nd. But yeah, Puck's my guy there. Stomat, I think, is kind of the obvious guy in KC. He's pretty good too. So I think they would just go to Stomat.
Does it surprise you that Danny Jimenez is still rostered with an ownership percentage of 77% in the main event?
Remarkably.
So, they've been kind of holding on to him too as he's been on the IL, which is just a shocking. Normally, NFBC main event players, being that we do not have IL spots, we'll cut bait on somebody like that.
Similarly, in the Are you surprised that Aroldis Chapman's still 96% rostered in Mains?
Yeah. Rob Silver tweeted something out about it. And then your boy, or our boy, I could say, I've had my morning drinks with Dusty in Vegas before. He was like, you know, kind of being facetious, like, well, do you mean I can get him for a dollar? And then Rob responds back like, I don't think anybody's going to add
him. He thinks nobody's going to get him.
Including you, Dusty, with your facetiousness. So, I really wouldn't. Look to add Aroldis Chapman. If you are in the same,
I haven't been either.
Yeah. If you, let's say you're going into Fab this weekend, I need to take some darts. I have a spot to stash. I'm looking to add somebody that could potentially get me saves, and Aroldis Chapman is there. I'm pretty sure that there are other people that I would look to add over Aroldis Chapman, and you can get these guys for a buck as well.
This might get clipped as a stupid comment in hindsight, but I would pick up Felix Bautista before Aroldis Chapman.
And no, I
do believe that Baltimore can
Lopez going to get traded,
and that they won't even be a signature. It won't even be a sign that they don't think they can contend. You still have to trade Jorge Lopez here. I think this is even more clear cut than Kendall Graveman being traded by the Mariners last year. The bullpen is what their strength is. So you can move one guy who's a 29-year-old journeyman who you got throwing 100-mile-an-hour sinkers, trade Lopez. That's not quitting on the season. But then Felix Bautista becomes the guy there. I would prefer him to Chapman, especially because Chapman's going to cost a lot more in a waiver market.
I've got one more for you, and it's Rowan Wick. I think Robertson's definitely going to get moved.
Has to be. He's 37.
It's pretty obvious that he does, and I think with what they've done when Robertson wasn't there, and currently Wick has 4 saves. It hasn't been pretty, but...
But if you want the numbers,
he's the guy. He's
if all you want it. Is the saves, look, yep.
People have drafted Mark Melanson in the past, right? We've seen the Alex Colomays.
Were you playing during the Sean Jacone days in Colorado?
Absolutely.
Yeah, like it's just nuts. By the way, let me pivot on Stelmont. I didn't realize Stelmont was walking 6/9 this year. That is not nice. I don't think you can put him in the closer's role with that kind of 144 whip. I'm going to pivot a little bit. I'm going to go with Taylor Clark, the boring option. Yeah. He's a 29-year-old vet, but his numbers are there. You know, he's got 36 strikeouts, 6 walks, and 40 and a third. Again, not eye-popping, but doesn't walk, guys. I think they might let him get some saves. He has 1 on the season. That might have been like a 3-inning type deal. But Taylor Clark, I would actually look at a little bit more than Josh Stelmont because he's walking way too many guys right now.
Now look, and when we're mentioning this, Taylor Clark is on, you know, he was somebody that I was kind of looking at.
Yeah, you put him on there.
Being one of the guys. When we're saying this, throw $1. It's $1 this weekend, and he is your fourth or fifth option, and this is your pitching spot that's a churn and burn. If you have that luxury with you know, you don't have guys currently on the IL, take that shot because Barlow, if and when he does get traded, whoever it may be that gets the opportunity, and if it happens, and oddly enough, most of the time after a guy gets traded, he gets traded on a Saturday, and on Sunday, the Royals get a save opportunity, and it's Clark. Let's just say that $1, it now goes to 25 minimum. Yeah, minimum. And so things like that can change. And if you can afford just to piss on a buck, then you take that shot this weekend. And I think that this weekend and the next weekend are pretty important to do so. Or it's this week. This is like the one.
This is the number one one, but you can still get some bargains next week because the next week will be the 31st. So you'll be 2 days away. And some things might have already happened via trade too. So this is the weekend to do it on the cheap. The 24th, if you want a spec, figure out your best spec and go do that. I got to be honest. I jumped on the Bautista train a bit early because I'm Giovanni Gallegos guy.
Took
that fat L on Gallegos, even though he's getting the occasional save. He's not the guy, obviously. So I went into that Bautista market, got him. He's just been sitting on the bench. I didn't have IL guys, so I took the gamble early, and hopefully he comes through.
I did that last week with your boy Ozzie Albies. And
there you go.
I added him. I just typed him in earlier to play. Like when you go to set transactions, you can type in the player to see where you have him at on which team specifically to set your lineups. And I now have him on 7 NFBC main event teams. Or not main event teams. Jesus, that's a degenerate. 7 NFBC teams. I only have 3 main event teams.
That's still fantastic. I loved Albies coming into the year.
And so then when looking at his recent news, it kind of took me down a little bit of a rabbit hole. So his projected return timeline is mid to late August. And I know we're just creatures by habit when looking at a calendar and you go, well, it's still July, it's not August. But now that we're really, really getting close to August, people are going to read this weekend when looking for fab that maybe add a stash, and they're going to see August, and it's going to cost more this week. And I think that we're going to be seeing that more and more. And there was three players similar to Ozzie Albies that I found a little bit interesting that could come back, let's say just even for a month, 4 to 6 weeks, let's call it. Wander Franco, Gene Segura, and Salvador Perez. They're all sub 80% rostered in the main event. If you had the luxury and you were able to just stash someone, you could choose one of them. Who would you choose and why?
Segura. He's the only one.
Is it because he's coming back sooner?
Yeah, it's just the time thing.
It's the return date.
I have no interest in Franco this year. Okay. Literally zero.
I think he's a cut at this point, actually.
Yeah, 100% a cut for me, because you're talking late August, early September for him. It's a hamate, which often saps power. He didn't even have that much power to begin with. So no, you can start looking at him around August 10th, maybe, you know, like early, as it shifts from early to mid August, the early double digits of August, then you can start looking, because it's a 2 week hold, but no shot. Segura is the guy. He's the closest. He can still contribute. Obviously they're going to get him back. That's almost going to be like a trade acquisition for them. And yeah, he was the easy one for me there. What's his face? Perez is working on some drills right now. Sal Perez, you can maybe start to look there if you want. He was just not a guy that I was super in on this year. Just too much volume on that body that I was just too scared to pay that premium.
That will capital on anybody that's a catcher for me is a no-go.
Exactly.
But for me to pound my fist on the desk in that regard, I'm the type of guy that waits on these catchers, and now I have like MJ Melendez or whomever, you know, the combination may be
Jonah Heim.
I think though, if you do this weekend or the next, he's only rostered in 70%. So he's available in 30% of main events. If you have like me in a main event, I have Christian Vasquez and Christian Bethencourt. I have MJ Melendez and Sebi Zavala. Sean Murphy and Jorge Alfaro. That one I'm leaving. Like, whoop, yes. Leave that one alone. But the other two that I mentioned in the combinations, Christian Bethencourt and Sebi, now that Grandal is going to be coming back, those are two spots where I'll churn and burn and just stream the catcher spot where Sebi is. But if you have the luxury and you're in that sort of situation and you're contending, I think maybe you can take a little shot on Perez if you can get 4 weeks from him.
I did it with Stevenson. Now, obviously, Stevenson had more time, but it was that.
And he's back, baby.
Yeah.
I love that guy.
And getting him back, you know, Colin and I cut him, and then I picked him up on my other main. It was one of those where I was like, I advocated cutting for him day one because we thought, you know, it's going to be 6 weeks. Cut him right away. We tried to get him back in that league. We couldn't. At least I got him in one of the leagues. But, yeah, with Sal, like I said, if you have a catcher situation where your second one is just churning anyway and you're just playing Elias Diaz for a week because it's Coors or whomever.
Exactly.
You can then hold Sal Perez if you're not holding a bunch of other injured guys. I'd say maybe one other injured guy, but ideally I try to go one stash only. It really depends on team construct, but I try to only go for one long-term injury stash.
I'm going ham right now in the Vegas main event. I have Brian Reynolds, who was already on my team and hit the shelf, and then this weekend I added Ozzie Albies and Lance McCullers. But I added McCullers for $5, and I was like, you know what? I was getting greedy, to be honest with you, but I'm okay with it.
Because that could be so good.
And I looked at how much he was already rostered in the main event and where he's at in the process. I think people might have been sleeping on him a little bit.
I think for $5, I can understand that. Like, you know, if you have – this is another reason why I favor positional flexibility too. I'm kind of a sucker for it, maybe a little bit too much sometimes. But then I get in situations like this where I want to pick up somebody like an Albies, and boom, I actually can because I've got – Jake Cronenworth, Brandon Drury, each with three spots. Urshela, Brian Anderson, Bobby Witt, Josh Naylor with infield, outfield. I got guys that can move all over the joint. So now I got Ha-Seong Kim with three spots on my bench. So I have more flexibility. So maybe I can hold an extra hurt guy. So I didn't have to cut Jeffrey Springs right away. I was able to, because I have Bader. So Bader's like my main stash. I was able to stash Springs for another couple weeks. Push come to shove and he doesn't return in time, I'll move him. But he's supposed to return against KC this weekend, so I should be golden there.
We got to get out of here. I got to say, though, I love Josh Naylor, and I can't wait for him to get traded at some point and get a play in the playoffs because that motherfucker go crazy.
Same. Huge fan.
He's the man, dude.
All about him this year.
TV needs him. We need more. Baseball needs more Josh
Naylor.
His hype
is awesome.
We need that.
All the smoke. Hey, don't sleep on Cleveland maybe making the playoffs.
I would love it. I would love it. I'm here
because
for it.
He's a big part of why they have some offense around Jose Ramirez.
And you know what? Kwan and Rosario have really set the tone for J-Ram. And now that Franmil Reyes is healthy, they've really got something brewing. Yes, they do. They've really
got players.
They've got it. They've got, and Clase is the best closer in the league. You heard it.
Oh, my God. He's such a best. And we know their pitching. Their starting pitching is clean, too. So, you know, if they get a mid-tier bat, like, I know they're not going to pony up because they're cheap. Get a mid-tier bat there. They got a chance to make some noise. So anyway, maybe, Maddie,
another Michael Conforto plug.
Maybe they could, right? Like
Boris can send us some royalties on top for plugging.
And we're trying to place them for you. We want a quarter of a percent. We don't need much. Quarter of a percent each between Maddie and I. We'll take it. Matt, it was great talking with you again, man.
Yes, thank you. Plug anything if you got anything. I know you're always at Fangraphs, Rotographs. You got your podcast with Justin Mason. You guys are going to be doing Podpalooza this weekend.
Exactly.
You're anything nailing else? And you got Twitch, your Twitch. You got Twitch your MLB Twitter. The show that you do. You're crushing it over there. You Spora. And Jen, you are happy with Charlotte.
We're doing
got
great.
The happy
got
house,
too,
happy life.
Don't forget our other dog, Henry. Oh,
I don't even know if I know.
I don't know if you know him. He's right there. He's a puppy right there. He's a little bit
black
bigger now.
Yeah, I don't know if I know Henry.
He's a King Cavalier Spaniel.
I love
King
that
Charles
painting,
Cavalier
by the
Spaniel.
Way.
He's a sweetheart.
That's fucking cool.
Oh, yeah, my friend did it. She nailed it. Like, she got their essences so perfectly. It's unbelievable. Anyway,
I'm gonna,
you got to get going.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Okay, yeah. Thank you so much, Paul. And, this is the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast. We'll be back next week.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast with Matthew Davis and Vlad Sedler. Make sure to follow your host on Twitter at @MattyWood_ and @RotoGut. Hit that subscribe button so you don't miss an episode.